Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's guest is Lottie Bildrici of Running on Veggies. Lottie is the author of the Running on Veggies cookbook, as well as the blog Running on Veggies. She's a holistic nutrition coach and was born and raised in New York City. She's a recipe developer, a six-time marathon finisher, and an Ironman finisher. Lottie survived cancer when she was in high school and went on to become passionate about health and running as a result. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Lottie. All right. Hi, Lottie. Welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. This is so fun.
Yeah, I feel like we've known each other for a while, like you being in Boulder, me spending time there. So it's really nice to be here.
Yes, Lottie and I have a lot of overlap from just the running world. You worked with, I know, like Kara, and you're friends with Emma. And so I've just been around you quite a bit. And it's so fun to get to have you share your story here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. So I always start by asking the guest, how did you get into running? Tell us a little bit about how you discovered the sport.
Yeah. So I didn't grow up like doing sports or any type of like organized sports, I would say. It was definitely like later in life that I started to run. I was a senior in high school and I had Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was in ninth grade. So having gone through that, I was like always looking for my purpose after that. Like, how could I give back? You know, what am I doing with this? It was like weighing on me a lot. And then my senior year of high school, a bunch of kids were going to Disney World to do a half marathon to raise money for a local cancer center. And I was like, oh, how amazing. I'll raise money. I'll do this race and I'll go to Disney with my friends and that'll be it. And I remember just like training for that and finding a community in running and just finding a sense of like purpose. And I think like when your whole life is like out of control at such a young age, there's some sense of control you feel with running. So I trained for it and I did it and I crossed that finish line. And it was like the first time I felt like in control of my life and I felt a community and I felt like driven and purpose. And I did that race and I was hooked. And ever since then, I've been running. So I've been running since I'm like 17. Yeah. And then looking at the kitchen and, you know, finding food as a way to enhance my performance was very natural for me because I grew up in the kitchen. My mom's an amazing cook. I'm named after my grandma Lottie, who was an amazing cook. So it was very natural for me to look at like what I'm eating and how it's affecting my performance. And that's kind of how Running on Veggies was born.
That's amazing. And we were just talking about how you were born and raised in New York, which is super rare in the city. What was that like, you know, learning how to run or trying to run in New York? I've run in New York a few times and I'm always surprised by actually how runner friendly the city is.
Yeah. And I think like growing up in Brooklyn, I wasn't really around so much nature, but when you do run and you're in the parks, it's an escape in a way. And you get to see the city in a whole new light. You know, I would run down streets that I never would run and just explore the city in a new way. So I really loved it. And I loved the sense of like being able to escape and having that sense of nature and then going back to everyday life, which is like hustle and bustle of the city.
Yeah, I'm always curious, what is it like growing up in a city, especially like New York City, which is, I feel like, so romanticized in just the media in general?
Yeah, it's kind of all I know. I love the culture of the city. I think it was really cool to be able to like read a book about the Natural History Museum and then go and then like just be in it and be part of everything that's happening. I think it'll be really hard for me to ever leave the city because of that. But yeah, I love it. I think that like New Yorkers are special. We like move in a certain way. We hustle in a certain way. And it's definitely in me. I used to have anyone who knows me like 10 years ago, I used to have a crazy thick Brooklyn accent, but I kind of worked on it. But yeah, I love New York and I don't think I ever see myself leaving.
Wow. Yeah. It's always so fun for me to visit. It's so different having grown up in Colorado. Like there's no tall buildings around, you know, everything's pretty spread out. And I feel like when I have friends who've been born and raised in New York and they come to Colorado, they're like, there's too much open space. There's too much blue sky.
I loved it though. So like when I was spending time in Boulder back in like 2015, I fell in love with it. I think like it's important to have the balance of both. You need it to like decompress. So I always try to get out to Colorado whenever I can.
Yeah, I'm biased. So do I. It's one of my favorite places. But that's something that's so cool about running is it can bring you so many different places and so much different scenery, just different landscapes, which is so fun. And I'm curious, before you got into running, did you do any other types of sports growing up?
Not really. Like I played tennis a little bit. I was always a little bit more athletic, but I didn't do a lot of other sports. Yeah, running was like my first sport that I really fell in love with. And then, unfortunately, I experienced a lot of injuries running early on, like multiple stress fractures. And that's when I picked up the bike, picked up swimming, and eventually did an Ironman because of it. But running was like always my first love, first passion, first sport.
Wow. Yeah, and it's fun to find that a little bit later in life, too. And, you know, a lot of people I've talked to on the podcast growing up were in a bunch of sports and running. And so nutrition and performance from an early age was something people talked about with them. What was nutrition and food in general like for you growing up? What was your family's relationship with food?
I would say it was pretty much like a diet culture, I think. It was all about like being as thin as you can, trying to fit into a dress, trying to fit into a box. It wasn't so much about performance and how nutrition's playing a role in your performance in any type of way. And I think what really healed me in my relationship with food is when I started to run and I started to look at food as fuel and not so much of like a restrictive way. Instead, it was like, what could I add to help me perform better? And it really like overall like helped my relationship with food and the way that I see it and the way that I cook and the way that I talk about it. So, yeah, I grew up like kind of, like I remember going with my mom to Weight Watchers when she, like, there was always something, there was always another trendy diet that she was on. And I think I kind of always wanted to break that cycle of, you know, diet culture.
Yes, for sure. I feel like our age, like kind of late 20s, early 30s, we were growing up when our parents were in the peak of diet culture. And just the things that we hear from growing up, you know, sometimes they stick with us. And I'm curious, is there anything that you felt like was really hard for you to undo from what you were around when you were growing up?
It's so funny, like the millennials, like what we grew up around, like I don't know if you watched it, but I watched the Biggest Loser behind the scenes documentary. And it's so interesting that like that's what we were watching and it was okay. And like, it's just, yeah, it blows my mind. But I would say like, I think it was kind of an all or nothing mentality in my house. Like either everyone was on a diet and super strict or we were eating whatever we wanted. So I think like, it's kind of hard for me as like a type A person to have that moderation. But I think as I got older, I've allowed myself to do that more.
For sure. I see that a lot, the all or nothing mentality. And I always try to tell people, athletes and non-athletes alike, it doesn't have to be like that. There's room for everything. And you went through a big health experience when you were growing up. You mentioned you were diagnosed with cancer in high school. What was that experience like for you? And how did that change your view of health overall?
I think it also played a role in like how I look at food. And I love to tell people this. It's kind of like my motto when I speak about having gone through cancer, but I had no choice but to have chemo and radiation. And I felt really empowered by the choices I was making and what I was putting in my body. So I wanted to be knowledgeable on it. I wanted to understand the why behind it. And that's really what allowed me, like what inspired me to dive into nutrition and understand how the food that I'm eating is affecting my body. So I look at it very differently than the way I grew up. It's like a diet culture. Instead, it's like I want to nourish myself and I want to know what I'm eating is helping me and helping my performance. And I want to go to every doctor's appointment knowing I'm doing the best I can. The same way I show up to a race, I show up to the doctor's appointment the same way, prepared, you know, knowing that I'm fueling my body correctly. So it definitely changed my perspective on food. But like while I was going through treatment, it wasn't like that at all. I grew up in like a big Jewish family, so everything's kind of centered around food. So we would like, I remember I would have like a doctor's appointment the next day or whatever, and we would like find a fun restaurant to go to. So I had a lot of like memories of like just being indulgent and enjoying food, but it wasn't, we didn't talk about like health and what I was eating at all when I was going through treatment, which I think I would look at a little bit differently now.
Yeah, it's so interesting. There are so many parallels between going through a major health experience like cancer and training for something like a marathon. You know, like there's only so much that you can train. Like there's only so many treatments you can receive. But the things you can do outside of that, the sleep, the fueling, you know, taking care of your body, those are the areas where you can find that extra advantage, I would say.
Yeah, they all play a role in you showing up to the best of your abilities. And I always like to say, like, I like to go to bed at night knowing I did everything I can, and that's all we could do. So I think having the knowledge and, you know, also a balance between everything, because even, like, it's so interesting having, like, spent so much time around professional athletes. Like, some of us who are not professional athletes take ourselves way more seriously than the pros do. And it takes the enjoyment out of it. And I think, like, I saw such a big difference in my performance and my happiness and overall health when I stopped being so strict on myself and so hard on myself.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. There's so many, I think, non-elite athletes who think that elite athletes are sacrificing everything. And the reality is, like, that's not true. They're finding balance. They're finding ways to incorporate foods that bring them joy and things that bring them joy, which is such a huge part of it. And I would imagine after going through so much at such a young age, it changes your perspective on what's really important.
Yeah, totally. And I think, like, finding joy and finding happiness in everything and, like, not taking myself too seriously and knowing that I'm doing this all for fun and I'm doing this because I'm choosing to do it and just running towards the things that make me happy. And I think for a long time, I didn't want to share my story of having had gone through cancer because I thought it was my identity and there's so much stigma around it, but I think just embracing all those aspects of yourself are important. And I think I like to recognize it because it is a lot of the fuel behind what I do today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if there's anyone listening who's going through a major health experience right now, do you have any words of wisdom or advice for them? Something maybe that you wish you had known going through your experience?
I think, like, people told me this while I was going through it, but, you'll be really grateful for the experience. I think life has a lot more meaning and a lot more substance after going through something really difficult. But when you're going through it, it's really hard to see that. But you just have, it's not like every day I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, thank God I'm alive, like all these beautiful things. But you just move through life a little bit differently. And I'm not as scared to do things because of what I went through. I don't feel like, you know, I move through life a little bit more fearless.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something to be gained, it sounds like, from even the worst of experiences, which it's always hard to feel that in the moment. But it sounds like, you know, having been through it, coming out the other side, there's a lot that it did give you in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I would not be where I am today if I didn't go through that. I would never be passionate about nutrition. I would never start running. I would never have the community that I have. Like, I'm so grateful for the experience of what I went through. And it sucks. Sometimes I have to go to doctor's appointments and checkups and things. And it's not always, you know, I'm not always grateful for the experience. But for the most part, like, I look back and I think when you're younger, you just want to conform to everything and you don't want to stick out. I remember all my friends had brown hair and I was like, I told my mom, like, I don't want my hair to be yellow. And now, like, I pay so much money for my hair to be blonde. So I think you start, like, as you get older, you embrace the differences and the obstacles that you've been through.
For sure. And I think that's an important, like, lesson for younger people who are listening to this podcast to learn. Like, it feels like in the moment in high school, it matters so much what other people are thinking or doing. But the reality is when you grow up and you get older and you look back, you know, it really doesn't matter. And there are things that are so much more important than that, like enjoying your life, enjoying your food, and finding ways to move your body that feel good to you.
Yeah, totally. I love that.
Yeah. So you started running on veggies as a result of going through everything that you went through. And I would say you're probably one of the earliest, like, quote unquote, influencers out there. Yes, you really are. You started it with a blog and then it kind of transitioned from there into a bigger thing. So tell us, what is running on veggies? How did it start? And kind of what do you do with it?
Yeah, it kind of happened organically. It was 2012 or 2013. It was like my first year of college. Instagram had just started. And I said, like, I'm going to create this Instagram account and just share my recipes of how I'm fueling for running. And I was in FIT for marketing at the time. And I had this like amazing internship at a record label. And I loved music. Like, having gone through cancer, like, I felt like music was like, I would run to music. I felt connected to music. And I got this like dream job, and I remember baking cookies and bringing it in every day and that being the highlight of my day. Oh. And then, like, you know, waking up to run. And I just remember like revolving everything around running and cooking. And I was like, I don't think I should be doing this anymore. But, yeah, my Instagram had started, I was posting a bunch, and then Carrie Goucher started following me, Shalane Flanagan started following me, and I was like, this is a mistake. Like, when are they gonna unfollow me? I was like, they don't know who I am. And then this was even before DMs. Like, I couldn't even connect with anyone.
Wow.
And then I remember Carrie Goucher emailed me, and she said she's having a running retreat in Napa, and she's having all these people speak, and she wanted to know if I would speak on nutrition and make a smoothie and do like kind of a cooking demo. And I was 20 at the time.
Wow.
And I got on the phone with her and I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know if you want me to come. And she's like, no, I love your approach to nutrition. I think a lot of people make it unattainable. And I just love the way that you speak about it. And I think you have so much to share. And it was like imposter syndrome times 100. I was like demoing smoothies in my kitchen with my mom like 10 times before I went. Wow. It was the first time I traveled alone. I went, I met her, we became fast friends. And then the following year, she had the retreat in Breckenridge and she asked me to come to Boulder and hang out. And while I was there, I was like, could I cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I would love to cook. And she's like, yes, of course. Here's my keys. Go to Whole Foods. Do what you want to do. And she was training for the Olympic trials at the time. It was like 2015, 2016. And at the end of the week, Mark and Heather had gone up to me and they were just like, we never saw her perform like this. If she has a chance of making the team, you need to stay and cook.
Wow. And
yeah, it was, I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life, but this is an amazing opportunity to move in with the Gouchers. And I loved Boulder. I had met Emma and just like so many people there. And I decided to stay. And it was a true testament of what I was doing was needed in the space, but also effective and working. And we saw her performance skyrocket. I continued to post recipes. And yeah, running on veggies continued to evolve. And I think I never started it with the intention of it being my career or monetizing it. And I think that was kind of the best way to do it because it was a true labor of love and passion project. And I still pinch myself every day that I get to do this. And I always like to tell people, when you feel like you're giving every single day, you found what you love to do and you found what you're supposed to be doing in life. It's not always like you're never going to work a day in your life, but when you feel like you're really giving to people, you really found what you're supposed to be doing. So I love to cook. I love nutrition. I love running. And I found a way to like make a career out of it. And running on veggies is really a resource to inspire people to get in the kitchen. I eventually wrote a cookbook with Ping and Random House in 2022. And I continue to do stuff in the New York running community and on social media.
Wow, that's so amazing. So you were so young when it all started. And what I'm hearing is the first thing you thought is like, this should be a mistake. Like, there's no way this is real. Imposter syndrome is so real. I think in life and in running, that's something I personally struggled with in running was like, there's no way I'm on this start line with all these big names, or there's no way that I'm like fast enough to be here. And I think it's something that does permeate a lot of runners' lives in different, you know, facets. So thinking back on that experience, what could you say to somebody who might be struggling with imposter syndrome?
I think you have to realize like everyone's experiencing it in some degree. And I think people who have confidence are able to do a lot more. And it's not about being the smartest in the room, but it's about being the person who's willing to like put themselves out there. And I think, you know, having confidence, you have to have confidence to do that. And sometimes it's like fake it till you make it, you know, just give yourself a chance and try. And, you know, you always have to say like, what's the worst thing that could happen? And for me, the worst thing would be not trying. So I always want to try.
Yeah, 100%. I feel the same way. And I think too, like taking away from your story, you're needed. Your expertise is needed. You never know what you could bring to somebody else's life. And just by you showing up, doing what you were already doing and promoting something that you were so passionate about, it spoke to so many people and grew, it sounds like, faster than you ever anticipated.
And I think like people were experiencing, there was a lot of disordered eating around running. And I think I kind of made it a safe place to talk about nutrition. And it was way before that, like, things were accessible like they are now. You know, I was reading Rich Roll and Scott Jurek's book, and that was like the only resource I found around runners talking about nutrition. So it was definitely needed, and I think it's still needed. And I love what you're doing also. And I think there's so much, you know, there's so much room for improvement, and we need to continue the conversation with female athletes, especially around nutrition and fueling.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm curious, because you were one of the original influencers, how has Instagram changed? What have you seen change about Instagram over the last, you know, decade or so since you've been in the space?
It used to be so much more casual. I think, you know, obviously now people have careers around it and there's brands involved, but it used to just be like posting. Didn't matter what time you were posting, what you were posting. So I think it's a little bit more buttoned up and polished. And I think like TikTok is kind of like more fun. But it was just pictures also. There was no videos. So it was a different time back then.
Yes, for sure. And the messaging too, I feel like I've noticed over the last decade or so. But I do feel like when you were first on Instagram, it was just keeping up with your friends. It was more like Facebook, where you're just like seeing what your friends are doing and, you know, learning about other people. And now it's become this place where people primarily get their information and, you know, where they get a lot of products that they're going to buy. Like, it is the way that I think the youth now are exposed to so many topics. And I'm curious if that's something you've noticed in the nutrition space as well.
Yeah. And I think the hardest thing is it's an overload of information, and you have to be a critical thinker, and people are always trying to sell you something. So you really have to, you know, pull the curtains back and think for yourself, because there's no one way of eating. There's no one way of thinking. So be critical about the way that you look at things, and don't be so extreme. I think I'm definitely not an extreme person. I'm not, you know, you have to be eating keto. You have to be eating this way, that. Like, everyone needs something else. And don't fall for it. I don't know.
Yes. For sure. I say to athletes, like, be a critical consumer and have your flags up if you're seeing someone who is on the extreme saying you need to cut out something, you have to do this, you have to do that. There is no extreme in nutrition. It's always going to be in the middle. Being a critical consumer and just thinking too about what is your purpose of using Instagram when you're on it. Are you trying to connect with people and learn things? Or, you know, are you in a space where it's going to create more stress or anxiety around things like food or training?
Yeah, and you could tailor who you follow, like unfollow someone if it's triggering you in a certain way. So we're more in control of our feed than we think.
Yeah, for sure. Social media is just addictive. It's become its own kind of beast. That is a whole other thing. But it's just so cool talking about somebody who was around as kind of like the first ever influencer that I was exposed to personally. So really cool to hear your story and how you got started with running on veggies. And along the same time, you had started training more seriously for the Ironman. You mentioned that was kind of like your first really big competition. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, finding that, training for that, and most importantly, fueling for an Ironman.
Oh, yeah. So I had experienced multiple stress fractures, and I ended up swimming and biking and doing that when I was in Colorado, because there's a huge triathlete scene there. And I love endurance sports. So it was my way of like participating in an endurance sport without the impact on my body. So I did a bunch of half Ironman, and then I had my Instagram, but I had never shared my story about having gone through cancer. And I was thinking, like, how could I share my story and how could I do it in a purposeful way? So I reached out to Leukemia Lymphoma Society and I told them, I want to do an Ironman and I want to do it with you guys and I want to share my story and raise money. So on the 10-year anniversary of my cancer diagnosis, it was the same weekend I did the Ironman in October of 2018.
Wow.
It was a really cool experience to do something so physically taxing 10 years after, you know, going through something that was like the hardest thing on my body. And now I'm all about like taking the power back, taking the day back. And it was a celebration of life and everything that, you know, you could do. I'm also not about like being a victim of your situation. And I felt like it was just super empowering for me. Because I never thought I would ever do something like that. I probably will never do one again. but it was awesome. And the fueling was really challenging, I think, to figure out how to get enough calories in on the bike. I remember just trying to eat as much as I can on the bike, mostly bars. And then when I got to the run, it was like gels and goos and stuff. But it was a long day. It took me like 14 hours. So,
wow, that's amazing. And that's so powerful. I mean, the kind of juxtaposition that same weekend, you know, 10 years prior, you didn't get to choose going through that physical experience. And 10 years later, you did get to choose and you got to prepare and you got to push yourself. And that just sounds so empowering.
Yeah, it was really emotional. There's like a video of me like crying, crossing the finish line. I think like anyone who does an Ironman, it's like you're just, anything could happen. It's such a long day and so much is out of your control. But I think like the training is also super incredible. Like I was training mostly alone, like doing 100-mile bike rides alone. I enjoy discipline and I enjoy like working towards a goal. So it was such a unique experience. And I was 24 at the time, so there weren't a lot of people even in my age group who were doing it. And I ended up qualifying for Kona because of it. There was like no one in my age group and they're like, do you want it? And I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm good for a while. But yeah, it was awesome. I would say like everyone should try to push themselves to do something like a little bit outside their comfort zone once in their life. It was a once in a lifetime experience that I'm really grateful for.
That's so incredible. I'm always so amazed by people who complete an Ironman, mostly because I am getting ready to run my first ever marathon and that's just one third of an Ironman. So yeah. I am just so impressed. I'm doing New York.
Oh my God. I'll see you here.
Okay. I will be in New York. Yes. I'm doing New York.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you've run New York Marathon twice.
I've run New York three times. I'm doing Chicago this year and I just got a bib to New York. We'll see how I feel, but I'm pretty sure I'll do it for fun. But New York is one of those like races that is so special. You experience New York in such a beautiful way. You stand on top of the Verrazano Bridge and they're playing Frank Sinatra and it's just like, it's the best day ever. You're going to have so much fun.
Oh my gosh. I am so excited. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you will have potentially done New York four times at the end of this year. You're getting ready for Chicago. So now you've finished six marathons with potentially two more on that credential list at the end of this year. What was that like for you finding the marathon after doing something so physically demanding like an Ironman? What got you into marathoning?
I had a lot of friends doing the marathon, and at the time, I think I was always just nervous about being injured again. I experienced so many stress fractures. I was like, I don't think my body can handle it. I started to do a lot more strength training, and I ran like four marathons around 5-hour mark, and I always just like accepted that about myself. I was like, okay, like I'm more of a 5-hour marathoner. And then it's funny, once I became less strict and hard on myself, and I took myself so seriously running 5 hours, like I was in bed early, like just so diligent about everything. And then It was the winter of 2024. I figured London was on my 30th birthday, and I was like going through a hard year, and I was just like, let me just do what I can, train, how run 3 days a week, and I ended up running a 409.
Wow.
Without really like training so hard, and I was like, oh, this is so interesting. I guess this plays into the nutrition role. I was experiencing very low iron leading up, like I didn't know over time my hemoglobin was going down. So that winter I was like having really low energy, and I went to the doctor, they did blood work, and they saw that like my ferritin was -3, and they're like,
okay. Oh my gosh, yeah, -3.
Yeah, they're like, you're losing blood somewhere and we don't know where. And
wow.
You're due for a colonoscopy because of your cancer treatment. So we think you should do a colonoscopy now. Like, I was due for it next year because you might have ulcers in your colon. I was like, that's extreme. Like, I never saw blood in my stool. Like, I don't think I have that. Like,
yeah.
That seems a little invasive. But I ended up doing the colonoscopy. And then they said, you have ulcers all going down your colon. And over time, over the last 10 years, I went to the same hospital. You could see my hemoglobin going down slowly. And they said that they think I had Crohn's. So then we did another camera endoscopy. And then they confirmed that I had Crohn's. So over time, I was losing blood. And my ferritin was low. And like, everyone's like, eat meat, all these things. And I was like, my body's not absorbing nutrition, whatever it is. So I did an iron infusion and I felt like $1 million after that. And then I did London and performed so much better. And now I'm on, you know, now I figured out Crohn's medication. I got my iron under control. And I think it was a huge unlock for me to, with my performance. I would say like when you go to doctor's appointments, like fortunately and unfortunately, I don't need to advocate for myself so much to get these things done, these tests, because they're always like, do a test because of my history. But if you feel like something's wrong, like advocate for yourself. I'm really glad that I did that colonoscopy. And he actually told me like, I have no symptoms of Crohn's other than anemia. And he said it's because I eat such an anti-inflammatory diet. So and people usually find Crohn's when they have a big flare up and it's like kind of late in the game. So I'm happy that I was able to get it under control, but my running performance has gone a lot better because of it. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm doping every time I have to get iron. Yeah. And then my doctors are like all invested in my performance now, which is fun. It was a huge unlock for me, but also like the mental unlock. I also like went to therapy for the first time. So he actually helped me like instill a lot of confidence in myself, which is huge in running. I think you need to understand that you belong there and like, why not you? And I think like I thought of that in all other aspects of my life, but not so much in like my running performance. I just accepted that like this is the type of runner I was. Mm-hmm. And I started to say like, why not me? I show up every day. I'm consistent. I could be a great athlete. And I started to really believe in myself and put myself out there. And then, so I did London. I did 409. And then I was like, okay, there's something there. I could be better. And then I did New York. Like, it was April. I did maybe like 6 months later, I did a 345. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a huge jump. And now let's see what happens in Chicago.
Yeah. And you said this is going to be your first kind of flat marathon. So really good opportunity to run a big PR.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. And now like I'm working with a coach and I'm really doing workouts and I'm enjoying it. Like I'm really enjoying running, and it's really nice to like channel that energy that I have into it and see like just I think seeing the results and seeing that. Like I always tell people with nutrition, like nothing's going to motivate you more than feeling good by what you're eating. So just seeing the results of like running and performing and like going out for a run and like it's super hot and humid and I'm not like completely dead by the end, or like doing a 20 mile workout run. Like usually I'm just trying to survive a 20 miler. Now I'm like adding in a workout. So it's crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing what proper fueling and good blood work can do for you. And I think your story about getting diagnosed with Crohn's is also a really important, you know, takeaway that sometimes you do, unfortunately, have to advocate for yourself in the healthcare system. But looking at history, this is why I always encourage runners to get labs done frequently. You had so much data to say, like, this doesn't seem right, something is dropping. And luckily, like, your healthcare team caught that. But a lot of runners, they don't, because it's not quite below normal. And so they're like, oh, everything's fine. So taking control of your health and being there to advocate for yourself if and when you need it. And it sounds like you've been so fortunate to have such a great care team that's invested in your health and your performance, which is so fun that they also care about your performance, which is a huge part of your life.
Yeah. And like, I think it comes very natural for me to advocate for myself in doctor's offices, because I grew up going to doctor's offices and just asking questions and wanting to know the long-term side effects of things. So I was also super diligent about, like, I don't feel good, let me go get this blood work done. And then, okay, now I need to get an appointment with a hematologist. So like, as much as they were proactive getting me these appointments and tests, like, I was also. So you need to be on top of that. And I think, our health is the most important thing. So definitely advocate for yourself and be on top of your blood work. And as an athlete, we have different markers of what is normal. So, sometimes you have to do your own research also.
Yes. And work with a specialist who is trained in sports medicine. That's a huge, huge thing for athletes. And yeah, like you said, like, your health is what's going to allow us to show up in life, not just in sport, but in life for friends and family in our lives. And like you said, not just saying like, oh, I don't feel great, but I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Like, you have to acknowledge if something doesn't feel right, that, of course there's going to be times where you're tired. There's going to be times where you don't feel great. You're going to get sick occasionally. Nothing to be concerned about. But if you're experiencing something like just kind of this chronic fatigue, you're really not feeling like yourself, acknowledge that and seek out answers, and don't just kind of push through it, because the sooner you get answers, the sooner you can get a treatment that's going to help you, whatever that may be.
Yeah. And I think for so long, I felt so tired and I didn't know why. And I think as females, we just accept it. Like, we wear so many hats, we're doing so many things. But yeah, you got to stay on top of it.
Yes. And health and performance is a huge thing for you, of course. So now that you are more well-versed in performance and performance nutrition, what do you feel like are some of the biggest things that you try to encourage other athletes to do with their fueling?
I think for fueling, like, timing is so important. I think people underestimate that, and they'll go for their long run and they'll, take their sweet time till they get home, until they eat. So I think timing is important. And I think also, like, practicing your nutrition strategy is important, because we spoke so much about, like, confidence and showing up to race day confident. And I think a big part of that is, like, practicing what you plan to do on race day during your training. So many people reach out, like, what should I be doing on race day? What should I be eating? I'm like, well, what did you do every long run? And people are like, oh, I did this one time and I did that and I felt okay. And I was just like you have a training log, you got to have a nutrition log, see how that food made you feel, see what you have access to on race day and try to stimulate that. So I think practice as much as you can, because you want to show up and you don't want to think about nutrition. You want to think about running. You don't want to think about the shoes you're wearing. You want to just know that you practiced in them and you feel good in them. So I would say, like, the more you could practice your fueling strategy during training, the more confident you will be on race day.
Yeah, for sure. And we get a lot of confidence on race day looking back at all the training we've done. So the same thing goes for the fueling and even the gear piece. Like, knowing that you've done it before makes it way less nerve-wracking on race day. If you're showing up to race day like, oh, I hope these gels sit well in my stomach, like, it's already a little too late there. Like, hopefully they do, but we should know that. We should know that for sure. And yeah, I love that you highlighted, like, what is accessible for you on race day. That's always something I'm trying to tell people. Like, if you're having frozen toast or waffles every day before your long run, that's great. Can you replicate that in a hotel on race day? And if you're in an Airbnb, you maybe can. But if you're in a hotel, maybe we need to try out some different options. And just really being aware of how can we make race day essentially just another long run day.
Yeah, I traveled to London with my Ezekiel bread. I got to the hotel and I was like, and I think I even called them before. I was like, could you toast this for me in the morning? Wow. and I think like even for Chicago, I'm like, what am I going to do? Maybe. And then I was like on Amazon, there's like a $15 toaster. Maybe I'll just Amazon a toaster so I could, yeah. I could have that. I'm very much into my routine and I know it works for me. And there's always a way. So you could always figure out a way.
Yes, I have called the front desk and asked for a microwave multiple times during my time in sport when I was traveling for races. So, like, yes, there's definitely ways you can make it happen. And absolutely practicing for race day is a huge one for sure. And speaking about, you know, trying out different foods and things, I think thinking about fueling around training and throughout the day during training is also hugely important. Something that you do a lot of is recipe development, which is always something that is so cool to me. I've like played around with adapting recipes based on things I have in my pantry or don't like or whatever. But I'm so curious, what is it like developing a recipe? Does it start with like an idea? Does it start with ingredients? Like, tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, I think like living in New York, I'm like super inspired by the restaurants that I get to eat out. I'm inspired by ingredients that are seasonal, which I always try to, you know, use. But it's really fun for me. I think I don't think of myself as a super creative person, but when it comes to the kitchen, I just like have this natural way of like putting ingredients together. And I think I also just want to make it accessible and easy for people. I know that people don't want to spend tons of time in the kitchen. Sometimes I don't want to spend tons of time in the kitchen. So, and I don't want to use a ton of ingredients. So like even with my cookbook, I use ingredients that you'll see throughout the book. So if I'm using almond flour, it's not just going to be in one recipe. It's going to be in multiple recipes. So I try to make it accessible, affordable, and easy, because if it's not, we're just not going to do it, and it has to be sustainable. It's not like, you know, it's a lifestyle, and that's what I try to really promote. And I also like, I eat fish and eggs, but I don't eat meat, but I try to make my recipes adaptable to the protein that you like to eat. It's more plant-based, more veg heavy. And then I always like to tell people like that should be the majority of your plate, and then sprinkle in animal proteins where you see fit. But it's definitely not one way of eating.
So what are some of your favorite recipes that you've created?
If you know me, I love desserts and I love making desserts and I love figuring out a way to amplify them and just make them more nutrient dense. So even like cooking for Kara back in 2015, she also loved desserts. And I was like, okay, how could we, instead of making them empty calories, like what could we add to these desserts that you're going to benefit from? So I would make like a tahini fudge, and tahini is one of the richest sources of calcium. Or I would make like black bean brownies, or I'd make like an apple cobbler with oats and flax seeds and chia seeds. So I think there's like always a way to get the most out of the food that you're eating. So I love like creating desserts and figuring out ways to like amplify them.
Yeah, and I love that you're saying, like, amplify them, not replace them or totally redo them. Like, they sound amazing, and they have extra nutrients, which is incredible.
Yeah, I don't like to look at it as, like, restrictive, and I don't like to, like, try to make something that, I don't know. I think, like, I hate the idea of, like, being restrictive and taking things away. Instead, it's like, what could we add to make this better?
Yes, and you're already speaking to the mentality that I'm trying so hard to get other athletes to embrace, which is adding, not subtracting. Like, what can I add instead of focusing on what should I take away to get better? What should I add to get better? What can I add to my life, which I think is so huge. And your cookbook, which you just sent me, I got it over the weekend. Yay. I'm so excited to try it. Has some incredible recipes. Do you have like a top three favorites from your cookbook that you would want people who are maybe new to it to try out first?
I think like the chocolate chip cookies are definitely one of the biggest hits in the book. I think because it's so easy, it's so great. I always have them in my freezer. Like I make a bunch, I put them in the freezer. The kale salad is one of my favorites. It has this like cashew dressing, which I really like.
Yum.
And then at the end of every chapter, I have a recipe from a professional athlete that I either worked with or have a connection with. So I think it's really cool to get a peek inside of their kitchen and how they fuel. And I'm thinking of some of those recipes. Like I would make this like mango salsa salmon for Kara. So that's in the book. And then Aisha has this Jamaican rice and peas, which are like unbelievable. And I was visiting Boulder the other month and we made it together. So I think there's like a lot of fun layers to the book. And the smoothie chapter is also one of my favorites because I love a smoothie, but I also think that like it should be more of a guide. So I have this guide in the book about like a liquid, a fat, a protein, and a carb, because I think a lot of the times people make a smoothie and they're like, I'm hungry an hour later, it wasn't satisfying, and they're not checking all the boxes. They're not putting in a fat. They're not putting in enough carbohydrates or protein. So I have that kind of guide for people in there.
I love that. I love that it's a smoothie guide because it's so like accessible for everybody. You can mix and match. You can use what you have on hand. You don't have to go buy all these new things. You're just checking those boxes, which like if you guys have heard me talk before about the plate model, that's like kind of a similar idea where you're checking the boxes, you're building your plate, you're building your smoothie, and you're checking your boxes. So some really great resources in there. Highly recommend anyone listening to go check out her cookbook, Running on Veggies. And yes, speaking of recipe development, getting into the kitchen, if anyone's listening to this and they're new to cooking, do you have any advice for how someone might get more into cooking?
I would say, like, make something that you actually like. Don't, you know, don't make something because you think it's healthy and you feel like you should be eating it. But when you enjoy what you're cooking, you're going to enjoy what you're eating. And I love to eat, so I love to cook. So like find something that you love to eat and try to make it.
I think that's such good advice. And speaking of like loving food and loving what food does for you, it sounds like food for your family was something that brought you together. You have a really, you know, rich family traditions that are based around food. And something I'm always trying to remind athletes is that food is not just fuel. It's also other ways that you can experience life. So I'm curious for you if there's anything that you can relate to with other aspects of food besides just fuel.
Yeah, I love bringing people together around like food and hosting, and I love hosting a dinner party. And I think like I grew up with a lot of big family dinners and holidays, so I try to do that every so often and invite people over. And even sometimes I'm like, it's too much for me to cook everything, so like everyone brings something. But I love doing that, and I love like going to new places and trying new places. I'm like always on TikTok trying to save things. And I recently, like a bunch of my friends, we have been running to destination spots that we want to like try and eat at.
Fine.
So there's like, yeah, there's all these like viral like smoothies and ice creams and things. So we'll like meet up and run and try new things. So yeah, experience life through it. Like food should be enjoyed. It should be embraced and everything in moderation. But yeah, like running to destinations have like a fun way to experience food, and combining running and food, which I love.
I love that little food runs. That's a super fun thing. So there's an idea for anyone listening who needs something new to try with their friends that they run with. Pick a new place that has something that's viral or that sounds really good and go run to it together. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this, Lottie. Before we kind of wrap up with our rapid fire questions, any last kind of words of wisdom or messages that you want to send to anyone who's listening?
I think like continue to find the joy in everything that you're doing because it'll show and people will see it. And if you're not having fun and you're not enjoying it, like what's the point? So I think that's been my motto lately. And yeah.
That's I love it. That. Yeah, do things because you want to and because you love them. And there doesn't need to be any other reason besides the fact that you feel like doing it, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And we're going to wrap up with our fun rapid fire questions if you're ready. The first question is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Oh, I love Ezekiel Red with peanut butter, honey, and raspberries smashed on top.
Yum. That sounds amazing. What would you pick for your quote unquote last meal?
Oh my God. I like love ice cream and I just got a Ninja Creami. Do you have one?
No, I don't, but I've heard so much about them.
I've been like selling everyone on the Ninja Creami because I've been making protein ice cream and it's changed my life. And
yum.
I love ice cream. So probably some type of ice cream, but that's not really a meal. I don't know what my last meal would be. I love, okay, Spumoni LMB Gardens Pizza. If you're ever in Brooklyn, you have to go try that pizza. It's iconic Brooklyn pizza. That'll probably be my last meal. And they have pistachio ice cream there. So that everything.
Yeah. Everything you could ever want. I'm putting that on my list for my New York trip. So I'll check it out. Perfect. What is your favorite dessert? I think I know the answer to this.
Well, yeah, ice cream.
Ice cream. Yeah. Do you have a favorite flavor?
Mint chocolate chip.
Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah. That's a people. It's controversial. So I don't know.
It is controversial, but I feel like if I want something that's like refreshing and also dessert, I would go with a mint chocolate chip.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It is for sure. Do you have a least favorite food? What would it be? What would be your least favorite food?
Oh, yeah. I hate mayonnaise so much. Anything that has mayonnaise, absolutely not. And I hate ketchup.
Okay. So not a condiments person.
I am. I love hot sauce. I like mustard. But ketchup and mayonnaise, nope.
Not for you. All right. That's fair. That's a common one, actually. I hear that a lot with mayo-based foods, potato salads and stuff like that.
I don't like it.
Yeah, that's fair. if you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
So I've been to Tokyo and I love Japanese food and I definitely want to go back. I love sushi. I loved every single thing that I ate there and I definitely want to go back.
Really solidifying Tokyo is my number one spot. It's been that way for a long time, but I've got to go.
You got to go to Tokyo. I have to go. It was unbelievable.
Ugh, dream world. That sounds amazing. Yeah, I would agree with that. What is your go-to lazy meal?
Lazy meal, I love a pasta, easy. Maybe a protein pasta or something, but I would say that. And that's usually everything I have in the pantry, so.
Perfect.
Don't need to go shopping for it.
Yeah, beautiful thing about pasta, you can mix whatever you want in there.
Got frozen veggies, tomato sauce.
Easy, perfect. And last question, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
Oh my God, okay. Coffee, I love espresso. I would do a cortada, probably is my favorite type of drink with oat milk.
Yum, amazing. Well, Lottie, thank you so much for sharing everything. Where can everybody keep up with you if they'd like to?
Mostly on Instagram, I would say. Running on Veggies is my handle, and I post a lot there, share recipes. I also have a website, runonveg.com, where a lot of my recipes are, or my cookbook, Running on Veggies.
Amazing. And definitely check out her cookbook if you haven't already. Thanks so much, Lottie. We'll be cheering for you for Chicago, and hopefully I'll see you in New York.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Lottie, you can find her on Instagram at runningonveggies. You can also head to her website, www.runonveg.com, to see her blog, recipes, and find her cookbook. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.